You're in the Car with a Beautiful Boy. Written by Pale Redhead in a Sci-Fi, and read to you by Be Brave 13, a 911 fic featuring the pairing Evan Buck Buckley / Eddie Diaz. Summary. You're in the car with a beautiful boy, and he won't tell you that he loves you, but he loves you. And you feel like you've done something terrible, like robbed a liquor store, or swallowed pills, or shoveled yourself a grave in the dirt, and you're tired. Eddie doesn't know anything about poetry, but somehow, this queer poetry book knows everything about him. Author's notes. There's an undercurrent of internalized homophobia from our number one closeted diva in this, something to be aware of if you're not in the place to read, or in this case, listen, to it. Lots of Richard Sykin quotes in this. The book he's reading is Crush. Full credits are in the endnote. Eddie Diaz is 32 when he first learns what it feels like to be kissed. He's been kissed before, plenty of times, but never like this. It's a regular Tuesday. Well, it's what a regular Tuesday looks like these days. Without Christopher around to give him purpose, and since Buck is freshly single, they've been doing a lot of nothing together. Tuesdays are loft days. Tuesdays are also taco days. According to Buck, Tuesdays are very specific taco days, ones from a very specific food truck that is very much not on the way home from the station. On Tuesdays, Buck drives 20 additional minutes to get the good tacos because he knows they remind Eddie of the ones back home. So on Tuesdays, Eddie beats Buck to the loft. On this Tuesday, Eddie lets himself in, toes off his shoes, and collapses on the couch, just missing a pile of books sprawled over the cushions. They're small and thin, not the usual books he sees Buck reading. He picks one up and flips it over. Winner of the 2005 Tom Gunn Award for Gay Poetry is printed on the bottom. He recalls Buck telling him about the queer poetry books Karen had lent him on the weekend. His phone buzzes. So much traffic, sad face. Might be a little later than usual. Did it send a sad face or the word sad face? I never tried to send an emoji via Siri before. Wait, maybe I should have said sad face emoji. Did that work? I added the word emoji after sad face. Is there a taco emoji? Taco emoji, taco emoji, taco emoji. This is terrible news. Don't let my tacos go cold. Your first emoji didn't work, but the rest did. And yes, apparently there is a taco emoji. You sent 4 of them. Drive safe. He sighs and accepts his fate, probably lukewarm tacos and at least another 20 minutes with his own company. He looks down at the book in his hands and flips through the pages, letting his thumb randomly bookmark a page towards the middle of the book. Buck's been into queer history and queer art and queer artists lately, so Eddie's been hearing a lot about it too. It made him feel guarded, maybe, at first. Like Buck was talking to a part of Eddie he wasn't ready for him to see. Because while Buck knows almost everything about Eddie, he doesn't know this. Doesn't know that Eddie is also somewhere on that queer spectrum, probably. Definitely. He's trying. He's trying to work towards accepting it, and without even knowing about it, Buck has been helping. Healing a little, just from the residual warmth of Buck's queer joy. How easily he's embraced the side of him that Eddie has shunned within himself. Shown him in the most Buck way that maybe it isn't wrong and scary. Maybe it's beauty and art and poetry. Maybe it's finding a part of yourself instead of losing it. So Eddie is admittedly curious about Buck's collection of queer poetry books for personal reasons. He's also curious what makes a poem a gay poem compared to a standard poem. If he's being honest, he doesn't know if he's ever even held a poetry book in his hands before. He had to read poems in high school, but he couldn't tell you a thing about them. He remembers thinking it was pointless, combing through purposefully confusing words to try and guess what the writer was trying to say. Why not just say the thing you're trying to say and save everyone a bunch of time? He scans the first paragraph of the random page he's landed on and feels his breath catch in his throat.
He reads it, every line stripping him bare like a live wire, and he's 13 again. He's 13 again, and he's wrong, and he's broken.
The blonde boy in the red trunks is holding your head underwater because he's trying to kill you. And you deserve it, you do. You know this, and you are ready to die in this swimming pool because you wanted to touch his hands and lips, and this means your life was over anyway. You're in eighth grade. You know these things. You know how to ride a dirt bike, and you know how to do long division, and you know that a boy who likes a boy is a dead boy, unless he keeps his mouth shut, which is what you don't do because you're weak and hollow, and it doesn't matter anymore.
He's 13, and he's pushing this wrong, broken part of him down, down, down. He does such a good job of it that he almost doesn't remember. Does such a good job of burying it that it stays as good as buried until he gets buried under a ton of dirt and mud on a stormy night 15 years later. He felt it take a gasping breath at the same time he did, clawing and crawling from a dark, cold place, refusing to stay buried, refusing to be weak and hollow, refusing to go back down again this time, not when there were blue eyes and curly hair and a giant heart clawing at the same mud above them. He skips through the middle, flips to the next page, suddenly desperate to know how this story ends.
The stranger says there are no more couches and he will have to sleep in your bed. You try and warn him, you tell him you will want to get inside him and ruin him, but he doesn't listen. You do this, you do. You take the things you love and tear them apart and you pin them down with your body and pretend they're yours. So you kiss him.
He slams the book shut. He pushes it down, down, down. He breathes. He thinks of Buck, sitting in traffic so Eddie can have the good tacos. Lighter and steadier and more free than he can ever remember him being. He thinks of Buck and his queer joy. He lets it float back up, makes a home for it again in his chest, lets it settle. He opens the book again, flips through to another random page, scans the words on the page like a masochist, almost wanting something else to eat him alive. It does. He's 20, 21. He's in El Paso. The baby is screaming. They're fighting, always miserable. He's broken. He's wrong. He's weak and hollow and ruining them.
I take off my hands and I give them to you, but you don't want them, so I take them back and put them on the wrong way, the wrong wrists. The yard is dark. The tomatoes are next to the whitewashed wall. The book on the table is about Spain. The windows are painted shut. Tonight you're thinking of cities under crowns of snow, and I stare at you like I'm looking through a window counting birds. You wanted happiness. I can't blame you for that. And maybe a mouth sounds idiotic when it blathers on about joy, but tell me you love this. Tell me you're not miserable.
He breathes. He remembers. He lets himself feel empathy for the 20-year-old kids who tried to do the right thing when it was never the right thing at all. Lets himself feel just a little bit proud of how far he's come. He fans through to another page and feels hysterical laughter bubble out of him when his eyes track over the words, your Jeep.
In these dreams, it's always you. The boy in the sweatshirt, the boy on the bridge, the boy who always keeps me from jumping off the bridge. Oh, the things we invent when we're scared and want to be rescued. Your Jeep, your teeth. The coffee that you brought me. The sandwich cut in half on a plate.
This one doesn't send him back in time. It doesn't send him anywhere except right here. 20 minutes from now, even. When the boy who kept him from jumping off the bridge will walk through the door with the good tacos he drives further just for him. He flips through the pages, chokes on this.
You said I could have anything I wanted. But I just couldn't say it out loud.
He knows he's not getting it the way Buck would if he were here, flipping through these pages. He doesn't know what the fuck the writer's trying to say. He just knows that he's talking about him. He's lived this. He's living it. And goddamn if he isn't starting to understand the appeal of poetry. He's not going to say he's enjoying being read for filth like this, but it's doing something. It's unlocking something. Or affirming something, maybe? He feels seen, understood, even if he doesn't really understand it himself because someone does. Maybe there are answers in here. Maybe this guy knows how he's supposed to pick himself up off the floor, piece his life back together, and get his kid back home. He probably doesn't, but he'll keep reading just in case. He flips the pages through his fingers again. Who do you want to be? You wanted to play in your own backyard, but you don't know where your own yard is, exactly.
You just wanted to prove there was one safe place, just one safe place where you could love him. You've not found that place yet. You've not made that place yet. You are here. You are here. You're still right here.
He remembers that feeling so vividly. Remembers sitting with Chris beneath his arm, giving into the pull to go someplace else. Anywhere else. Knowing, like his body knows it needs to breathe and eat, that he needed to leave. Hoping he'd find a safe place for them to land. He even remembers, months later, how it felt, arms around Bobby and tears in his eyes when it clicked into place. Remembers feeling it again later that night, deep in his bones, as Christopher told him again and again how he'd had the best day ever being a firefighter. How he'd giggled about something Buck had said and raved about the lunch Bobby made him, and excitedly reminded Eddie about the playdate they'd set up with Denny that weekend. He found it. He made it. He thinks, maybe, he's still right here. He flicks through a few more pages, landing in the middle of a long poem with lots of numbered paragraphs. One of them draws his eye.
Hold on to your voice. Hold on to your breath. Don't make a noise. Don't leave the room until I come back from the dead for you. I will come back from the dead for you.
His breath is caught in his chest. He turns the page, eyes racing over the words, searching for something, for this.
You're in a car with a beautiful boy, and he won't tell you he loves you, but he loves you. And you feel like you've done something terrible. Like robbed a liquor store, or swallowed pills, or shoveled yourself a grave in the dirt. And you're tired. You're in a car with a beautiful boy, and you're trying not to tell him that you love him, and you're trying to choke down the feeling, and you're trembling. But he reaches over, and he touches you, like a prayer for which no words exist. And you feel your heart taking root in your body, like you've discovered something you don't even have a name for.
And that's exactly it, isn't it?
I'd come back from the dead for you. I'd come back from the dead for you. He won't tell you he loves you, but he loves you. You said I could have anything I wanted, but I just couldn't say it out loud. I'd come back from the dead for you. You're trying not to tell him that you love him. You're trying not to tell him that you love him. Said I could have anything I wanted, but I just couldn't say it out loud. You're trying not to tell him that you love him. You're trying not to tell him that you love him. You're trying not to tell him that you love him.
But he does. He loves him. And it's beautiful and joyous and right, maybe. Definitely. He loves him. He hears the keys rattle in the door moments before Buck comes barreling in, all long legs and arms full of takeout bags and tacos. He's beautiful and joyous and bright. How could he ever have thought anything else?
Tacos have landed,
he calls on his way through the door. Eddie meets him in the kitchen, watches his practiced movements as he dishes the tacos and salsas and sides onto plates just the way they like it.
I got extra of the mango jalapeno salsa you liked last time. I'm thinking of trying to recreate it at home so you can have it whenever you want. Everything is still hot, I think, so...
Eddie kisses the apology off his lips. Buck gasps, and it's over. Eddie's pulling back to gauge his reaction, but Buck's pulling him in. Their mouths crash together again, and this time Buck sighs into the kiss. Eddie's pushing him against the counter, Buck's pulling him closer against him, and that writer was right. He feels his heart taking root in his body. Buck pulls back just enough to rest his forehead against Eddie's. He breathes. He opens his eyes.
Eddie, is what he says.
What did that mean?
Is what he means. Again, that writer was right, because Eddie has discovered something he doesn't even have a name for. A prayer for which no words exist. He doesn't know how to explain how he went from sitting on a couch to saying the thing he wanted out loud. Doesn't know how to explain that Buck is the boy who keeps him from jumping off bridges and brings him sandwiches halved on a plate. That he's tired of feeling weak and hollow and wrong, like he's done something terrible.
I'd come back from the dead for you, he says instead.
Buck blinks. He smiles.
You're in the car with a beautiful boy, and he won't tell you that he loves you, but he loves you.
Of course he can quote it. Of course he understands.
Yeah.
Eddie nods.
I'm saying the thing I want out loud.
I do, you know. Buck tilts his head and kisses him. Quick. Soft. Looks him in the eye. Searches for something. I do love you. Eddie pulls him in closer, whispers.
Yeah, you got me the good tacos.
Buck laughs. Eddie feels the queer joy burst out of his own skin.
I did do that, didn't I? They're probably getting cold.
You did. And you came back from the dead for me, too.
He lets his hand follow the same path the lightning took, sliding from Buck's shoulder, down his chest, over his beating heart. Buck covers his hands with his own.
So did you. Twice, really.
Okay, we don't need to relive our near-death highlights reel. This is supposed to be romantic.
What's more romantic than death and cold tacos?
Eddie presses his lips against Buck's. Let's Buck feel it there before he says it out loud.
I love you.
He feels Buck smile against his lips.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
How well do you think tacos reheat?
I don't really care right now. I'd eat them cold and be the happiest man alive.
He pulls Eddie in for another kiss. It's still soft, but it's hungrier. Wanting.
Alive.
Eddie is 13 when he buries his heart in the dirt. He's 32 when his heart takes root in his body. Eddie Diaz is 32 when he first learns what it feels like to be kissed. It's butterflies and burning, and it's a prayer for which no words exist. The end. Author's notes. All the poetry quoted in this is from, and the fic is inspired by, Richard Sykin's Crush, in order of where it's quoted in the fic. 1. A Primer for the Small Weird Loves. 2. Seaside Improvisation. 3. I Had a Dream About You. 4. Litany in which certain things are crossed out. 5. You Are Jeff, also featured in the title of this fic. All of those lovely, delicious words, of course, are Richard Sykin's. This is something a little different from me and very much something I wrote just because I wanted to write it. I hope someone enjoys reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. And a quick little Podfickers notes. I definitely enjoyed reading this, hopefully as much as Pale Redhead and a Sci-Fi enjoyed writing it, which is to say I enjoyed it a lot. I am a amateur poet myself, and I just thought it was really beautiful how Eddie finds Crush and, you know, opens it up and starts reading it and going, oh shit, this guy's fucking clocking me on these pages. That's me. Like, that's me. Fuck. That's me. And I really like the little found poem sort of part at the end, taking all of the different pieces of the poetry and just like the way that the two of them quote back and forth at each other, and the way that the phrases from the poems get worked into the narrative of the story. I think it's just really beautiful. And so, yeah, also just a quick note, I am also recording this for Voice Team this year,
and it's for guest of honor, and my guest of honor is a little poetry book that I own. Unfortunately, I could not find my copy of Crush when I was recording this, but I just picked up, you know, the nearest poetry book I had on hand, which is Time is a Mother by Ocean Vuong. Yeah, so I really hope everybody enjoys listening to this podfic, and yeah, I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye, folks.